This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They have to understand that they have to listen to those people and to start a dialogue to open up the political sphere and to open up freedom of expression, freedom of speech.
That's Mohamed Anwar Sadat, president of Egypt's Reform and Development Party, on the message sent to the government by low turnout in the country's referendum. Details coming up also. Fighting in Libya continues today as forces loyal to Commander Khalifa Haftar push nearer to the capital. And the Comoros government has shut down schools, airports, and public offices today as tropical cyclone Kenneth passes over the islands. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Sudan protest leaders have called for a million-person march tomorrow to demand that the military give power to a civilian council. The Transitional Military Council has suggested it would hand over power within days if civilian groups can agree on who will lead a new government. VOA's Naba Mohadine reports from Khartoum that the main protest group, the Sudanese Professionals Association, has called for huge street protests. Omar El Deger is with the opposition coalition. He said the opposition is hoping for a million people to turn out. The head of the Transitional Military Council, Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah Abdel Rahman Burhan, said yesterday that civilians could take over if the groups can agree on a new government. The same day, some African Union leaders meeting in Cairo gave the military 3 months to hand over power or face suspension from the group. United States Deputy Assistant Secretary of State of African Affairs, Mikila James, met with members of the military council and protest leaders yesterday. James called public demands for a civilian-led transition legitimate. The U.S. has said discussions on lifting U.S. sanctions on Sudan cannot take place until the military hands power over to a civilian administration. Fighting in Libya continues today as forces loyal to Commander Khalifa Haftar push nearer to the capital. Haftar's Libyan National Army is fighting heavily armed militias with links to the United Nations-supported Government of National Accord based on in Tripoli. The UN reported that the conflict reached a detention center holding hundreds of refugees yesterday. The UN says the center is 20 kilometers south of central Tripoli, with about 3,600 refugees and migrants held there. Five centers are already in areas where fighting is taking place, and six others are close to the combat zone. Many migrants from Africa south of the Sahara Desert pass through Libya as they try to reach Europe. And more than 30,000 people have been displaced by fighting in the western part of the country. A spokesman for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called the situation in the detention centers increasingly desperate. He pointed to reports that guards are abandoning their posts, leaving people trapped in the centers, which don't have drinking water. The UN's World Health Organization says 270 people, including civilians, have died in the fighting and nearly 1,300 have been injured. The Comoros government has shut schools, airports, and public offices today as tropical cyclone Kenneth passes over the islands with wind gusts topping 200 kilometers an hour. The storm is expected to strengthen as it heads towards the East African coast near the border between Mozambique and Tanzania. The storm comes as Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe are struggling to recover from last month's devastating Cyclone Idai. Major international aid agencies have been helping with the recovery from last month's storm, and they now are preparing for Cyclone Kenneth. Daniel Timme is the spokesman for UNICEF in Mozambique. He says the storm is expected to hit Cabo Delgado province tomorrow.
So we're taking it very seriously. We are currently deploying specialists in disaster response in the fields of health and child protection, in water and sanitation.
The UN Children's Agency and other aid groups are pre-positioning emergency supplies in the area where the storm is expected to hit. Tame says while Cyclone Kenneth appears to be weaker than Cyclone Idai, it remains dangerous in part because of the poverty of northern Mozambique.
Also, cyclones in that area of Mozambique are very, very rare. And so the population is not used to these events and is less resilient.
The storm presents new challenges for the recovery effort from Cyclone Idai.
We can expect that our own efforts will be stretched, but also the efforts of other aid agencies and the government.
Cyclone Kenneth comes also as South Africa battles floods and mudslides. After days of heavy rain across much of the country's east, at least 51 people have died in the country. The South African Weather Service forecasts more heavy rain and strong winds today. As the world marks World Immunization Week starting today, more children than ever are getting routine vaccinations, a record 116 million in 2017. According to the World Health Organization, and workers have effectively snuffed out smallpox and have come close to eradicating polio and malaria, saving countless lives in the process. But health workers are also fighting a disturbing trend of misinformation that urges people to avoid vaccination, that has created a climate of fear and ignorance, and in some rural places, violence. Such resistance, in turn, has delayed target dates for eliminating diseases, including measles, rubella, and maternal and neonatal tetanus. The WHO notes that children living in poor, marginalized areas are mostly affected. Health centers in Democratic Republic of Congo have become targets of violence, thanks to rumors that Ebola, which has killed 833 people since the outbreak was declared last August, doesn't exist or is part of a government plot. A doctor administering what looks to be a highly effective vaccine against Ebola was fatally shot last week. Opposition to vaccinations for religious reasons or the mistaken belief that they cause autism or carry toxic chemicals has resulted in a resurgence of measles in the United States, Mozambique, and other countries. Rebecca Martin, who directs the CDC's Center for Global Health, is optimistic overall but concerned amid outbreaks of measles, malaria, and the continuing fight against polio in Nigeria, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. She spoke with VOA's Paul Alexander.
World Immunization Week is a moment we take in time to celebrate the work of healthcare workers, of communities, and more importantly, parents to vaccinate their children to make sure that they can live long, healthy lives.
Is it surprising to see measles reemerge, especially so widely and apparently so virulently? And is there a lesson in that?
I'm not surprised to see measles reemerging or the outbreaks that are occurring, knowing what the immunization coverage is and knowing the concerns that are out there about, we know measles is such an infectious virus, and if we don't make sure that every child is vaccinated, it will occur. And we know out there from the data that CDC works closely with the World Health Organization and countries to collect those data to know what population, what percentage of the population is or is not getting vaccinated, and where are children not getting vaccinated, and to make sure we get vaccines to them.
What would you say to the anti-vaxxers who are out there, especially given that, as you mentioned, some doctors even recommend against some specific vaccines?
The critical role that healthcare providers play in a decision for a mother or father or guardian to get a child vaccinated is critical. And we need to arm the healthcare worker with the information needed so that he or she can be a trusted partner in the discussion about vaccination and that they have the information that's needed. And this is a critical effort that must be undertaken.
You talked about trust. That has certainly become a key issue in the Ebola outbreak that's out there now. And it's something that the people on the ground have run into lots of issues with. Is there a way to build that trust because they haven't seemed to find the right formula so far?
This year's World Immunization Week is focusing on protecting together and the important role that parents play, but also the important role that community advocates play. Community is critical in order to be able to, you may have the best public health intervention, but if you cannot get people to accept it and to understand the importance or value of it, you will not be able to change the dynamics of an outbreak. And so the importance of engaging the community, of the value and understanding the importance of the intervention, where they have to bring culture, tradition, religion, and science together and somehow relay that and communicate that to their people in their community is critical. And we are working on those efforts to date.
And what's the potential if the vaxxer resistance grows and spreads?
We have seen the value, if you are not vaccinating, there will be disease. And we saw this in the United States in the 1980s when vaccine coverage rates were going down, outbreaks of measles were occurring. So we know from experience in many countries for many decades that value of vaccines to prevent disease and save lives. If you don't vaccinate, you will get disease. And that's with the prevention piece. As the great public health hero Bill Foege says, people don't thank you for the diseases they don't get.
And that was Rebecca Martin, who directs the CDC Center for Global Health, speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. 17 past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Egypt's National Election Authority says voters have approved constitutional amendments that paved the way for President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to remain in power until 2030. The head of the authority said yesterday that 88.83% of voters approved the amendments, with 44.33% turnout of eligible voters. Pro-government media, business people and lawmakers had pushed for a yes vote and high turnout. Authorities threatened to fine anyone boycotting the poll. Critics say the referendum was another step towards restoring authoritarian rule 8 years after a pro-democracy uprising toppled autocratic president Hosni Mubarak. Mohamed Anwar Sadat, president of the Reform and Development Party and a former chairman of the Human Rights Committee at the Egyptian Parliament, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the aftermath of the referendum.
We were expecting that the final vote will be yes, although we believe that this turnout is somehow not correct in spite of all this mobilizations and all those incentives which have been offered to many people, which we all have been witnessing. But again, in my opinion, the regime and the president, they should somehow think twice about all those invalid votes and also those votes who have said no, which is in total about 4 million. They have to understand that they have to listen to those people and to start a dialogue to open up the political sphere and to open up freedom of expression, freedom of speech. A lot of things has to be done following the outcome of the referendum, you know.
But your party joined the civil democratic movement in rejecting the amendments as another step toward restoring authoritarian rule 8 years after a pro-democracy uprising that toppled autocratic President Hosni Mubarak. How would the amendments restore an authoritarian regime in Egypt?
This referendum and all these amendments, articles in the constitutions, bring back Egypt to square one, which we all thought that as from 2011 we will witness a peaceful transfer of power where we can see a president who will only last 2 terms, as it was indicated, 4 years each. The way we see it now is It's not happening. They have been extending for the current president another 2 years, and they also give him a chance to run for a third time, which is totally unacceptable. Moreover, the way we see more grab of power for the president on the judiciary, the military also being the guardians, being the protector of the civic life and political and constitution, the army is not a part of the political scene, and the army is not a political party. And giving the army the right to have veto in any elected civil president, this is something very risky. But again, the referendum is not the end of the story. There is more things to come. We are expecting to have an upper chamber, which is the Senate. So we have, as political parties, we have to think about how to run, how to get engaged in this coming Senate, and also the House of Representatives election, which will take place also in 2020. So this is not the end, although in general, we are not happy with what happened, and we have to think of tomorrow.
Thinking about tomorrow, what should the weak opposition do to avoid the mistakes that led to a parliament composed of mostly loyalist parties to the president?
They have to get together. They have to be more united. They have to be engaged with people. But of course, being engaged with people to recruit more and to have more participation on what is really happening in their daily life, it's not an easy thing, but we have to keep on pushing. And we have also to see from the regime, from the government, more access to the media, whether it's national media or private or independent. There has to be more access to all those who have different opinions, who have different positions, which is not happening nowadays in Egypt. So hopefully that the regime will realize the fact is that they cannot keep on shutting down everything, from civil society to making life difficult to political parties, even to journalists or media representatives. I mean, they should somehow understand that they cannot continue the way they have been during the last couple of years.
That was Mohamed Anwar Sadat, president of the Reform and Development Party, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Salj El-Shenawi. Rwanda's Supreme Court has upheld the criminalization of cartoons that humiliate and defame the head of state. Its ruling also confirms adultery as a criminal offense. These two provisions of the penal code were challenged by an independent lawyer, Richard Mugisha. Eugene Wimana has more details from Kigali.
Professor Sam Rugege, Rwanda's Chief Justice, says freedom of expression is key in holding those in leadership to account, and that freedom should be enjoyed without any limitations. But he says defaming the head of the state has to be a criminal offense due to his office's important responsibilities. Though his arguments failed to convince the Supreme Court, lawyer Richard Mugisha is happy that he was allowed to challenge the penal code.
The decision is, first of all, the end of a process. The first thing that you have to remember is that for the first time, the court has made a ruling. This court made a ruling that anyone who has any issue with a legislation can challenge its constitutionality in the court. So that is a process that we are very happy with.
Mugisha was trying to convince the court to decriminalize defamation on the head of the state, saying that to make it a criminal, we put the president out of reach of the media. On criminalizing adultery, Justice Aloisi Chanzahile, one of five judges who ruled in the case, says the legislator wanted to protect the sanctity of the family. But she says the court decided to scrap a provision that bars an offended spouse from stopping the prosecution in a case there has been reconciliation, which she said is in everybody's interest. Judith Kanakuze, the president of Profound Christ Harmony, says all women are happy with this ruling. We are very happy because it seems like all ideas we gave the court were executed in this ruling. Under the new code, any married person found guilty of adultery risks a jail sentence of up to 1 year. The same law prescribes a 7-year sentence and a fine of 7 million Rwandan francs for defaming the head of state. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
An animal orphanage in Zimbabwe is one of the organizations leading efforts to ensure poaching and development do not wipe out the wildlife of Southern African nation. Columbus Mavunga reports from nearby Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo.
About an hour drive southeast of Bulawayo is a special orphanage caring for abandoned and injured animals. The Chipangali Wildlife Orphanage is home to 25 animal species, some endangered, some rescued from poachers. Vivian and Paddy Wilson established the orphanage in 1973, and a second generation now runs it. Chipangali's co-director Nikki Wilson explains what motivated her in-laws to begin rescuing wildlife.
When Chipangali was started, there was only Crow, which was in Durban, and there was the Daphne Sheldrake orphanage in Kenya. There was no other places where you could put animals that couldn't survive in the wild.
Animals are brought to Chipangali after being injured, seized or orphaned, says Wilson. Some are later released into the wild, some are not.
Some other birds will fly into power lines and then they're missing a portion of their wing and they won't be able to be released. We also get baby animals. Now, sometimes if they are reared, they get too tame and then they would just think that every human is friendly. Unfortunately, that's not the case in our world. So then they will stay here permanently and we, as I say, utilize them for education.
The oldest resident of the orphanage is a crocodile rescued 4 decades ago from a community angry as it was eating their goats and cattle. The locals wanted to kill the crocodile, believed to be in its 90s, but at Chipangali, it was made part of the education program for visitors. Wilson shows visiting journalists a display of animal feces removed from mothers that died in poacher snares.
We obviously are trying to educate mainly locals, but anyone who comes to visit us here at Chipangali into the importance of Zimbabwe's wildlife heritage. Tourists wouldn't come and visit Zimbabwe if there weren't the big five like elephant, lion, buffalo, leopard, and then a rhino. So we actually are trying to tell people to look after animals.
Since its creation, Chipangali Wildlife Orphanage has rescued and released numerous animals into the nearby Matopo National Park. They include several troops of vervet monkeys and baboons, more than 30 pangolins, 5 leopards, 20 cheetahs, and various antelopes, small carnivores, and birds of prey. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com,
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.